Hey there, brain bogglers. It's your capital B, Brent here. Reporting in because your boys done goofed. We done goofed again. So here's the situation. We had recorded a full episode for this week for all of y'all to listen to. But unfortunately, due to some technical mishaps on our part, we accidentally recorded the wrong microphone for Jack. We have these fancy condenser microphones that you're hearing my voice come through right now, but somehow Jack's recording accidentally went through his headset, which is extremely choppy and unlistenable, and I wasn't going to do that to you guys and put that out, because even I couldn't listen to it, and I was the one trying to edit it. So what we're doing this week instead is we're going to release a Patreon bonus episode for you guys to listen to. This is an episode about the movie Inception and sort of like an extended episode of our Dreams episode. So if you haven't heard that one, maybe go give that one a listen first, because this is sort of like piggybacks off of that conversation. And yeah, so also if you happen to like this episode, check out our Patreon. That's patreon.com/brainbogglepodcast to hear other episodes like this. We have a new bonus episode coming out in the next day or two, so if you're interested in any of that, go check that out. But next week we'll be back to our regularly scheduled normal brain boggled episode. Hopefully we'll have all the technical shit worked out so you get a regular episode and we don't have to come hat in hand again, you know, begging for your forgiveness. So thanks for understanding, guys, and hopefully you enjoy this random Patreon bonus episode you're about to hear. So thanks again, guys.
Muy epic, boys.
Nice. Jack's new catchphrase.
I've been into saying it. I don't know why, but I've just been into saying muy epic. Do you know? But you know what is the most epic, the muyest of epics?
What?
What's that?
Is the fact that you're listening right now to the Patreon exclusive Brain Boglet. First off, I want to thank everyone who's listening, because if you're listening, yeah, it means that you've graciously donated us money, which is we're very, very thankful of.
You're an exclusive boy.
You get to listen to this Brain Boglet, which today we're talking about Inception to go along with our Dreams episode. I'm gonna vamp for time.
I tried the Inception horn there and it didn't quite time out right. That's fine.
Maybe it's fine because that sound is actually copyrighted.
Like, oh, is that really?
That sound specifically is, yeah, it's like, you can, like, obviously if I built the sound, like, you can, like, we could recreate the sound, like, as sure, long as we, like, as long, like, because we could be like, oh no, we used freaking French horns, they used trumpets, like, whatever, you know what I mean?
Right.
But yeah, we're talking about Inception.
There's another famous sound from Inception. I don't know if you guys know the song Time, but it's that one that they use in literally every single motivational speech on YouTube.
Oh yeah. The music Inception is so good.
It is so good.
That's really one of the stronger points of the movie, having rewatched it. So I just rewatched it within the last couple days.
Yeah, I rewatched it on Friday
for this episode,
I think.
And I it's probably like my fourth or fifth time seeing the movie. And what I will say is that overall, I really like the movie. The first hour kind of drags a bit when you know the rules. The first hour of the movie is literally just, these are the rules of Inception.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's because there's so many new concepts. Yeah. That they have, like, you have to explain it. Because the first time you see it, the first hour is actually really interesting.
Oh, definitely.
But after you know everything, you're like, oh my God, just board the plane, get on the plane.
I know. It was just kind of like surprising to me, because like I love this movie, and I was just kind of like, oh wow, yeah, this first hour is kind of just a drag, huh? So when you know all the setup already.
Yeah.
But
So Yeah, well, so Brent's already said that he likes it. I'm a big fan of the movie. Bobby, I think you're a big fan too, right?
Or maybe I really like Inception. I like a lot of Christopher Nolan movies. It's I'm a big fan of Christopher Nolan.
He's got
I love Inception.
He's got really really creative concepts. Oh, and definitely. a lot of times when you watch a movie like this, you'll be like, well, the concept is cool, but you know, they could have done something better with it. Like, have you seen Looper?
Yeah.
Yes.
Looper, I'm like, Looper's cool, but they could have done, you know, it could have been better.
Right. They had a really cool, like foundation.
Yeah. Christopher Nolan, though, I feel like he gets his weirdness that is like just impossible enough where you're like, okay, I can get behind this.
I think it's so funny that Christopher Nolan uses the same actors and actresses in all his movies.
Yeah.
He's one of those types.
Every director who has a style, like I think that is key. Every director who has a style always like uses the same actors.
Yeah, it's like he's the auteurs, if you will.
Yeah, like
auteurs.
Tarantino, Christopher Nolan, Wes Anderson, what's his name? The creepy one.
Tarantino. No, I'm just kidding.
No, Helena Bonham Carter, you know, Johnny Depp.
Oh, yeah.
Tim Burton. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Like they always use the same people because they like they think the same way, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's what I assume anyway.
Yeah.
Like you always hear like the interviews of people who like with Bill Murray. I can't believe I forgot his last name. And those people who always work with Wes Anderson, they're like, yeah, I just love working with him, you know.
Yeah, true.
I feel like the only one Taika Waititi is very stylistic, but he doesn't use the same actors all the time.
Sure. He's kind of new to the scene now too, though. That so like true. He doesn't have like a lot of work out there. So yeah. I mean,
well, he's new to the like the big budget stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
But he has a ton of those, like his little like quote, they're not indie, but like basically compared to what he's doing now, they're indie.
Yeah. For a while there it was like the New Zealand guys, like, you know, the Flight of the Conchords guys, you know, Jermaine Clement and stuff.
Yeah. I love that.
You know,
that.
Like in What We Do in the Shadows and, you know,
What We Do in the Shadows is such a funny movie.
I love it.
I love What We Do in the Shadows. I need to see the TV series. Maybe I'll watch that.
I hear it's good. I haven't watched it though.
Yeah. I hear it's very, very true to the movie. But we're not talking about any of those. We're talking about Inception.
Yes.
Okay. So I guess I'll give a quick rundown of what Inception is if you're listening to this podcast. Well, first off, we recommend you go watch the movie. It's on Netflix. So if you have Netflix, you can watch it there. If you don't, I think that is the only stream. It might be on HBO Max, maybe, or like Go or something.
I have HBO Max now because I had HBO Now and it changed to Max.
I noticed that. Yeah, too. I had HBO Now and I was like,
I have HBO Go and now it's Max. And well, no, Go is still separate.
Yeah,
for some I don't even know,
dude. It is but, so like, confusing
because Go you get for free with free quote unquote with your HBO subscription.
Okay, so it's
HBO
not.
Now is a subscription streaming service that's now Max that has all the other shit. But I haven't set it up yet.
Like, yeah, but also like, changed,
but I was like, oh okay.
You can just log in with your like if you get HBO on like cable, you can just log in with your cable information into HBO Max. Sure.
Well, I can tell anyway, you, Inception is not on HBO.
It's
Max.
Not on HBO. So okay. It's on Netflix. A quick rundown. So basically, in this world, the military has developed this technology. They never explain how it works and it doesn't matter. But basically, it allows people to enter the same dream as someone else. So one person is the dreamer, like they have the dream, and then everyone else exists within it. And so the movie starts and there's like this old Japanese man and there's all this crazy stuff going on. And you find out that they're actually inside of a dream. I think they're inside of two dreams right at the beginning. I think they're in a dream within
a
dream.
Layered, yes.
Yeah. They're That's already, where
they reveal the layers kind of like in that first sequence.
Yeah. And it's like the farther you go. So right now we're awake. We fall asleep. We're in a dream layer one. And then you fall asleep in that dream with the technology. Everyone goes to dream layer two.
Yeah.
And that is where you get like... that's where you get the like the access to the subconscious. So basically there's Leonardo DiCaprio And he uses this technology to go inside of people's dreams slash their minds and retrieve information that they wouldn't willingly give. It's basically, he's basically a thief of your mind. And so he's been hired by like Cobalt Engineering or some company to go inside this Japanese guy's mind. But then the Japanese guy is like, I know all your tricks. Ha ha. And then he's like, listen, if you do a job for me, I won't have you arrested. And I'll also be able to expunge your previous criminal record. And the job is to do Inception, basically. And so the first time I watched this, I actually didn't know what Inception was. I thought Inception was purely the act of going three dreams deep.
That's also what I thought. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. But for those who don't know, Inception is so taking information out of the brain is really easy and people do it all the time. What Inception is putting an idea into their brain that they think they thought of on their own, basically. Yeah. So the Japanese guy, his name is Saito. Saito wants Leonardo DiCaprio, whose name is Cobb. They want Cobb to go into this heir to some large company or something. They want him to plant the idea that the son, the heir of this company, needs to dissolve the company and start from scratch because Saito is a business competitor with this one guy. So that's basically... We basically just skipped an hour. That was the first hour of the movie, was that whole explanation.
Yeah, pretty much.
And the real movie starts.
He has to assemble his like team of like, you know, experts to help him incept this guy.
Yeah.
And that's also like,
he already has his team. This is where he has most of them, right?
Yeah, he has to bring on his new architect. So he goes and finds Juno at college and brings her on.
Oh, right, right.
Ellen Page. He
goes to his... So Michael Caine is Leonardo DiCaprio's father-in-law and who teaches architecture at this college. And then he goes and Michael Caine is like, you're not going to take her for your job. And then DiCaprio's like, sucks because I'm taking her.
Yeah. I need someone as good as me. I got someone better.
Yeah.
Why do they need an architect? Yeah.
Okay. Well, so they need a new one because their old one sold them out on the Saito job, and that's how they got caught by Saito.
Oh, right.
The reason why you need an architect in general is because when they go to extract information, the first dream is not actually your target's dream. The second dream is your target's dream, I believe.
So the architect sets the foundation for the first dream, and then they use that to manipulate them into the second dream themselves.
Yeah. So going into the second dream is where it's hard because that's the target's actual mind.
It's their subconscious.
And it's their subconscious. That's where their specialty comes in. The first dream is just like a way for them. The first dream, they basically could do all the steps they do in the first dream in the real world, except it's way safer to do it in the dream because if you mess up, it's all just in the dream.
Yeah.
Right.
And now so,
they try to plant this idea into people's dreams, into their subconscious. Now, in the movie, I kind of forget what exactly happened. You can pretty much plant an idea within the second layer deep, right? Like the first...
You can plant an idea anywhere, but...
It won't take unless it's deep enough and at its most basis level so that concept can sort of like naturally mature and, you know, form within the dreamer's mind, you know?
Essentially what they need to do... Bobby, what's your least favorite flavor of ice cream?
I would say pistachio.
Pistachio. So basically what they need to do is... If I was talking to Bobby and I said, you like pistachio ice cream, Bobby would obviously say, no, he doesn't.
No, I hate
it. So basically, what they need to do is they need to get themselves to tell the Bobby, you like pistachio ice cream, and Bobby to go, oh, yeah, I do.
Right.
Even though you don't. And that's where the difficulty is. And so Leonardo DiCaprio starts training Juno, Ellen Page. And in that training, Ellen Page discovers that Leonardo DiCaprio has this repressed memory of his wife that like comes up in jobs and will like sabotage things. Because if you go four dreams deep, you enter limbo, or if you're too deeply sedated while you're dreaming and you die, normally you wake up, but if you die in a dream when you're like three dreams deep and really sedated, you will go into limbo. And so this is something that I didn't understand until my very, very recent viewing of the movie, was exactly what happened with Leonardo DiCaprio and his wife.
Yeah, same. When I watched the movie the first like three times, I was like, this is a good movie, this is cool. And it wasn't until the last time I watched it that I like understood what was happening.
Yeah, I didn't understand that Leonardo DiCaprio had been to limbo before.
Right.
And I didn't realize
he's
that.
Basically lived an entire life.
He was in limbo for 50 years. So limbo is basically it's like unshaped, uncontrolled dream space imagination. And so normally dreams are individual, but limbo is shared by everyone. So anyone who goes in there and changes it, you can see everything. So Cobb and his wife had originally been the only people who had been to limbo and come back.
Yeah.
And after so they were stuck in limbo for what felt like to them 50 years, but it was actually probably just a few minutes in the real life. But like, obviously, we talked about in the Junji Ito episode with the long dream, that guy who gets stuck in dreams for like centuries. Like that's what happened. That's what can happen to people in limbo.
Yeah.
So Cobb and his wife come out of limbo, and then Cobb's wife, her name is Mal, she kills herself like sometime after they come out of limbo, because since she spent so much time in a dream, she can no longer determine what's real life and what's a dream anymore. Right. And so she thinks she's in a dream, so she kills herself to get out of the dream.
Because that's in the movie, they established that to wake up, you kill yourself in the dream.
Yeah.
Unless you're too far deep in the dream.
Yeah, the other way to wake yourself up out of a dream is what's called a jump, or like I always refer to it, a kick. They call it a kick, where it's like they describe it as when your chair is leaning back and you feel like you're going to fall, so you like startle yourself forward. That's what a kick is. And so that's the way to wake yourself up without killing yourself.
And it's cool that they have kicks within the dream. So like you're like a dream deep and they'll create a kick so that when you're in the third level of dreaming, you can wake yourself up at a certain time.
Yeah, that was super cool how they did that. So because since they're three dreams deep, you have to wake up in the third dream first, then in the second, then in the first.
Yeah,
or else, because you have to be in the sequence. So they use like they'll put headphones on whoever's dreaming so that everyone can hear the music when
it's like
so they know
cue.
Yeah, they know that the kick is going. And also every layer you go deeper, like time slows down. So like 10 hours in the real life is like a week on the first dream level. And then like 5 minutes in the first dream level is like half an hour in the second dream level. And like a few minutes in the second dream, I think 20 minutes in the second dream level is like an hour in the third. And then a few minutes in the third is like hours in limbo. So like limbo really, really slows you down.
And another thing that's kind of cool what they do is like when you are being woken up in a dream, like deep inside of a dream, however you're being woken up kind of breaches into that dream. Like I don't know if you remember the scene where they're in the bar and it like the whole building like floods because
it's not just however you're being woken up. It's anything that happens to you on the previous levels affects yourself deep. So like Saito gets when they finally do the big heist, Saito gets shot on the first level.
Mm-hmm.
And in the second level, he's like coughing and stuff.
Right.
But it's not that bad. And then in the third level, he's like completely fine. But then as his injury progresses in the first level, he eventually starts dying in the later deeper levels.
Mm. Right. Or like how the hotel, everyone becomes weightless in the hotel because they're in
midair. Because the van's dropping.
I love that scene. I always watch that and I'm like, how the heck did they film this? This looks so cool.
Oh, I actually know how they filmed it.
Ooh.
So the scenes where Joseph Gordon-Levitt is weightless, some things were done on wires, but they filmed a lot on those planes that fly in the parabolas that give you, like, like 10 seconds of Free Fall.
They actually did that?
Yeah, they filmed. Wow. That was in that. The part where the van is rolling down the hill, they built an entire set on a big, that whole hallway is one big set that is on a rotating thing. So the camera is fixed with the point of view of the set, and then it turns around so that they just, so cause the hallway doesn't like move around the whole, we, our orientation in the camera stays the same with the hallway. So to us, it just looks like they're climbing all over the thing.
Yeah.
But in reality, the set is just, the whole thing's just rotating around.
Imagine the like thought that had to go into filming that.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Well, dude, Christopher Nolan is insane with that kind of stuff. For Tenet, Tenet looks insane. Tenet is like, it's about this dude who can like manipulate time or something, and so he can like see things that haven't happened yet, and he can also go back. It's like, obviously I would have to see the movie to understand it, because it took me 5 watches of Inception to understand it. But for that movie, instead of, he found that it was cheaper to just buy a 747 instead of like recreating one as a set.
What?
Yeah, so for the movie, he just bought one and was like, all right, we're going to use this for the movie.
That's kind of sad that it's more expensive to build a fake one than it is to buy a real one.
Well, the amount of things that were shot on it, or maybe there was something like, I don't, why is it sad?
I don't know. It's like, what? It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. I don't think it's sad, though.
No, it's, like, it's not, it's really funny. Sad. It's just like, what?
It's not like shed a tear sad. Just like,
listen, I don't know about you guys. More like, crying.
How does that make sense?
It's sad. It's sad crying. that the inflated prices of the
airplane industry market.
Yeah, the stupid airplane industry is.
Well, thank God that's the only bad thing happening in the world right now.
True,
it is. It's the only bad thing.
Everything else is perfect.
Yeah, so that's basically the explanation of the movie. I guess we can talk about it like
theme wise. General discussion. Yeah,
yeah, the general discussion now.
Well, so I really liked, upon rewatching this movie, I really liked the you said her name was Mal.
Mal.
Mm-hmm. Mal. She was really,
which means bad in French. All of the names mean stuff. Ooh. By the way, Paige's name is Adrian, which comes from the Greek character Adrian from King Minos, the King Minos myth. Because she gave whoever was the hero of that story who had to go into the maze, Adrian gave that hero the golden yarn to let himself out. Or maybe not, maybe it's not golden yarn, but the yarn that let herself out. And if you remember, the final dream, level 3, is Ellen Page's dream. She is the architect of that, and she makes it into a labyrinth.
Right. And also, just to clarify, her name is Ariadne.
Ariadne.
Yeah.
They all have, like, weird ass names.
Yeah. I was
Tom
like,
Hardy's name
doesn't
is
sound quite right, but
Tom Hardy's name is Ames, like E A M E, like James with an E instead of a J.
Ames.
Ames. Yeah, they all have weird names. I guess Saito's like the only one who has like a regular like name, like, because he just has a Japanese name that like is pretty, I don't know if it might be a weird name in Japan.
Yeah.
But it seems pretty regular to me.
Right. The only normal one to me too is Robert, who is the son of
Robert Fisher or whatever it is. Who's
the scarecrow?
What's Joseph Gordon-Levitt's name in the movie?
Shit, I don't know. I got Wikipedia open right now. I just call people by the actors' names. Like,
yeah, I'm just gonna do that. That scene is so funny when they're on the first layer of they're in Joseph Gordon-Levitt's dream, but it's populated by, that's what the architect does. An architect builds a dream, but then lets the subject populate it with their subconscious.
Right. So like all the people that you see in that dream are people that you've seen, right? I think it's really interesting how they introduce the crowds as the subconscious. Like, sort of being aware that something's wrong. And like, yeah. if people in the crowd start to stare at you, that means your subconscious is realizing it's a dream, which is bad for the whole heist, I guess.
Yeah.
Because you want it to be like, you want them to not understand that it is a dream.
Right. Oh, yeah. Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character's name is Arthur, by the way. It's just a pretty normal name.
Pretty regular name. Yeah. Well, what they do is, I love how smart their like plan is for their three dream layer heist, because they get onto the plane with him, they knock him out, they put something in his drink to knock him out for the whole flight. Everyone on the plane is in on it, the flight attendants, everyone. And so there's actually a scene where they're like, we need to hire the flight attendants. And then Saito goes,
I
bought the whole airline. It seemed cheaper. Yeah. Speaking of just buying principle. The plane. Yeah, it's actually
That's
really
probably,
funny.
So that was probably why he did it, because he remembered that scene.
Yeah, probably. He was like, oh, maybe it's just easier. But they drug him. And then in the first layer of the dream, they make it seem like Robert, who's their subject, is being kidnapped and that is real life. And then they go one dream layer deeper where they tell him it's a dream. Yeah. So he thinks that the first layer dream is real life and he's really been kidnapped and is now inside of a dream.
Yeah.
So he's aware that the next two layers are dreams. So that by the time he wakes up entirely, he basically only remembers the first layer of the dream.
Yep.
And doesn't remember the rest of it and is just like, oh, all of these people who are on the plane with me were in my dream, except like obviously because I probably just saw their faces and then they got into my dream, you know what I mean? And they succeed. Well, they don't succeed basically according to plan, because they have to go, because
isn't there a couple different things that happen? So first is that don't they have to go deeper to try and save the Japanese guy's life?
Saito. So what happens is when Saito dies, they were like, well, they have to save Robert and Saito, because both of them die on layer three and then drop into limbo. Ellen Page and DiCaprio go into limbo because DiCaprio knows it because he's been there for so long before.
Yeah.
And so they go to save Robert, so they get Robert and then they bring him back to the third layer, and then Cobb stays there to find Saito afterwards. And they spend like 50-60 years again in limbo. Like Saito turns into an old man in limbo, but then wakes up and is on the plane again.
Which is
just like, it's just absurd.
It's just imagine like being trapped in a dream and you have to spend that long.
Well, this is where the big reveal of the movie comes in, like the big twist. It's not really a twist, but basically Saito is like, Leonardo DiCaprio, you know that Inception is possible because no one had ever done it before.
Yeah.
And Leonardo DiCaprio was like, yeah, I know. But he keeps his past completely hidden from his team.
Right.
And the big reveal is that you find out that DiCaprio knows that Inception is possible, because when him and Mal were in limbo, DiCaprio found a representation of her psyche, essentially, and put, because he was like, this isn't real, we need to get back to our real children in the real life. And she was like, we're gods here, why would we ever want to leave? So he put in the idea that this is all a dream and we need to die to escape. And he planted that into her mind so that they could escape limbo. But that idea carried into real life, where she thought that real life was a dream and killed herself to escape because of Inception. Right. And that whole bit is like, whoa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That part was really cool. Like basically like that Inception has been proven because it is what killed Leonardo DiCaprio's wife.
Yeah. It killed Mal. I don't know that actress's name. I only know her character name.
And obviously he didn't know that it would work the way it did, but now he knows how Inception works, which is why he's so confident
in it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Marion Cotillard.
Yeah, okay. We're gonna call her Marion Cotillard. Yeah, and her name means bad in French. Did I already say that? Yeah, when we had talked about the name.
I like to call her Talia al Ghul.
Talia al Ghul. Oh yeah, she's in The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another fun fact about how Inception got produced. Christopher Nolan made the first two Dark Knight movies, and Warner Brothers were like, okay, you're going to make that trilogy, right? Like, because DiCaprio was like, only if you guys let me make my little passion project movie.
DiCaprio and then I'll make Nolan?
Nolan was like, let me make my little passion project movie. And then Warner Brothers were like, okay, fine. So then he made Inception. And then after that, he made the third Dark Knight movie.
Right.
Which was trash, by the way.
It wasn't trash.
I didn't like the third one.
The third one is far from trash. That part is so sick.
My confession is that I have not seen all of that movie.
It's a good movie. It's just not boring. It's not boring. It's action packed. What are you talking about? There's so much action in that movie. It's just not The Dark Knight. How are you going to follow up The Dark Knight? What, like, many people consider to be the best movie ever. You know what I mean?
I hate it for personal reasons in that I don't think that Batman would ever just be like, I'm quitting.
Are you kidding? Have you even read anything? Batman gives up all the time. Batman thinks he needs to quit all the time and retire all the time.
Yeah, but he doesn't actually retire.
What?
He does. Batman never retires.
There's a few comic lines where he's like an old man and retired.
But like he was Batman for like 20 years before.
No, I know, Bobby, but also this Batman timeline is completely self-contained. So you need to have him retire at the end.
No, you're right. I just don't like that.
No, yeah, but it's like really, it's actually a good movie. Nobody, don't listen to Bobby. He's incorrect.
Well, talking about other good movies, I want to talk about the ending of Inception a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
See what you guys
think. Cliffhanger there?
Yeah, so I want to see whether you guys think it matters, whether or not it's real or a dream, but also get your opinions as to whether you think it is real or a dream.
I think it's real. After watching
it, I think it's real.
Mm hmm.
Before I watched it again and really paid attention to the ending, I was like, oh, it could be either or, but like it has to be real, like, because otherwise it's such a tragic ending if it's not real.
Well, and I might be wrong about this. The kids at the end,
he sees the kids' faces.
Yes,
that's why
that's definitely the biggest, that's definitely the biggest tell. But my thought process on it, that the cool thing about it in this whole movie is that I think it doesn't matter anymore.
No,
so
I don't think it matters either.
I don't think it's tragic, because even if it isn't real, like at this point in the movie, Cobb has sort of given up his grief over what happened to Mal and is able to move forward in like whatever version of reality he's moving in. So whether this is a dream world or a non-dream world, he's like let go of that grief and is able to like move forward. So like to me, like even if it isn't actually a dream, it doesn't matter, because like he can actually like move forward in like whatever reality he exists in now.
That's the other thing too, is when the movie first came out, there were like, at first it was like, it's a dream, it's not a dream, and then people were like, no, guys, it doesn't matter that it's a dream, and that includes the fact that he sees his children's faces. Everyone points to the fact that he walks away from the top, showing that he doesn't care anymore if it's a dream or not. But you never see the kids' faces before, even when it's real life.
Yeah.
So nobody talks about the fact that he sees his children's faces is also showing that it's not like him seeing his children's faces. People try to use that as it's real life evidence, but it's actually, it doesn't matter evidence, because he's finally looking at his kids.
Yeah, because before it's just about the regret of losing his kids because of his actions or whatever. Yeah. That's why he never sees the faces.
Because in real life, he just can't bring himself to face his children. Mm. In the dream, he doesn't want to get attached to children that aren't actually his in real life. They're dream children.
Mm-hmm.
So you never see the children. And I love that. It's so clever. This movie is just so clever. It's
Can I argue why I think it does matter?
Why?
So I think it matters because the whole movie, like the whole point of him incepting his wife in the first place was that he didn't want to get caught in a dream. He didn't want to forget. He wanted to go back to reality and see his children. And so I think that if it is a dream, then what I think about in that case is his kids are alone and they're not seeing his they're not seeing their father. And I think that that's not what he truly wants. I think he truly wanted to go back to his kids, whether or not it's his reality or not. There are other people involved. And so that's why I think I personally think that the character Leonardo DiCaprio plays would rather it be realistic. Like, he would rather be in the real world.
Yeah, but just because he wants to, just because he would rather to be doesn't mean that it matters now.
Right. That's, I mean,
because the whole thing is like him not, it's like he can't, like he, like the whole movie, he wants to go to his kids, but he can't because he has to, like, because of these criminal charges or whatever.
Yeah.
I think Mal also left. I think it's implied that Mal left, like false evidence behind to incriminate Cobb. Like, there was something about how she was like, oh, I told people that you were like abusing me or something. Mm-hmm. And like threatening to have, like, Mal leaves evidence that Cobb was planning on faking Mal's mental illnesses so that he could get full custody of the children. There was like some weird line about that that I remember vaguely.
Yeah, ultimately, I don't know how important all that is. Like, I see what you're saying, Bobby, for sure, and I think I generally agree with that sentiment, but I don't think that's what Christopher Nolan's trying to say in this movie.
Oh yeah, I feel
like
I agree
in general
with that.
This is more a meditation on just like grief in general, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so just the idea of like letting go of it and like it not mattering anymore,
yeah,
is more like the point he's trying to make in that scene. So whether or not that like has like consistent internal logic as far as the character goes, I'm not sure, because I feel like sometimes in Christopher Nolan movies it's less about the characters and more about the concept that he's trying to like express.
Yeah.
So like I feel like in this instance this might be a little bit of a case of that dissonance, where it's like more about the idea he's trying to express than it is about like the characters. The characters are just like vehicles to like push forward this like idea that he's trying to get across.
I can see that. It just frustrates me to think that he'd be trapped there forever.
Right. I mean, and again, like, I think at the end of the day, you can kind of read it however you want to, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Because it, again, like, it literally doesn't matter to the character, I think, anymore, and it also doesn't matter to the movie anymore, mm-hmm. whether or not he's in the dream or not, because he's found peace, and that's the ultimate goal in this situation, was to find peace, you know?
Yeah, true.
So...
yeah,
so that's I love how down that.
When they're doing the heist, I love how at first when they're interrogating him and they have Tom Hardy Ames pretending to be his really close family friend that he calls Uncle Peter.
Yeah.
Who is like part of the company as well.
Wasn't he also like his godfather or something weird?
Or he was maybe like he was an his uncle godfather. To him or something. He like just grew up with him, basically. He was like he was like best friends with his father. I don't think we can hear Bobby anymore.
Oh no, I just went silent.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. but he was his godfather, by the way. I just looked that up. So
yeah, it was essentially describe it as his like surrogate father, because Robert Fisher, the target, was like really estranged from his biological father. But they're interrogating the two of them, and he's like, I need the combination to the safe. Give me the first six numbers that come to your head. Just say them. And he just says six numbers, and those six numbers become important in layers 2 and 3 of the dream to like help him fully like think that this was his idea. I love when they're on layer 2, they tell Fisher that they're going inside of Uncle Peter's mind because they convince Fisher. They convince Fisher that Uncle Peter is the one who had him kidnapped in the first layer.
Yeah.
So his projection of Uncle Peter in the second layer then is like, oh, I'm sorry, I did it. But Fisher thinks that that's not a projection. Fisher thinks that that's real Uncle Peter who has used the dream sharing technology to all be in that same dream right there. Yeah. So then they convince him, they're like, we're going to go inside Uncle Peter's brain to figure out why he was trying to, what he was trying to steal from you.
Yeah.
So that we can use it as evidence against him when we go back into the real life. But in reality, they go into Fisher's mind. So they trick Fisher into breaking into his own subconscious. Yeah. It is so clever. I love that stuff.
And then they use the code again, right? Don't they end up using the code to unlock
the safe. Yeah. That has the like windmill, little thing in it. Ultimately, the idea that they incept is that, so on Robert Fisher's father's deathbed, he only heard his father say one word, disappointed. And Fisher thought that that meant that he was disappointed in him his whole life. But then because they turned his subconscious against him, they're able to make him think that what his father actually meant was, I'm disappointed that you never tried to be your own man.
Yeah.
And that you never tried to start your own thing. And so Fisher now, instead of just inheriting the company, he dissolves the company and starts to build one from scratch, which is kind of like Cobb and Ellen Page and Ames Hardy. They're not the good guys.
They're doing a bad thing. I mean,
and like Cobb is like a really like Cobb is like borderline irredeemable.
Yeah.
Like he like has to like, like, I think that's why they needed to just have him literally have his personal life restored, because I think people would have disliked it if Cobb had received success beyond that. Because you hear that Cobb isn't getting any money for this for this job that he's on. He's giving his money to another person on this job. And so Cobb, literally the only thing he gets out of this is like his life back, like the bare minimum.
Yeah,
and I think because of that, he was able to be redeemed. But like, because he did a lot of terrible stuff in his past, and his dude, like, that's pretty bad. Like, it's this poor guy.
It's funny to like think that, you know, you feel so good when you're watching the scene where Fisher's dad is like finishing his last words. And you're like, oh my God, this is so beautiful.
You're like, oh, this is so nice. He reconciled with his father, but he didn't.
No,
like,
that never
that's
happened.
Just a dream. His father in real life was a terrible jerk who didn't know how to connect to his son.
Yeah,
he was probably really disappointed in him. Like, it's really messed up.
Well, it makes you think about your own dreams. And like, I know some people, like, they'll have a dream and they'll act on something in their life based on that dream. Like, I know people who have started dating other people because they had a dream that they went on a date with that person. And it's like, some people have a huge influence, and dreams have a big influence on their life.
To be fair though, like in our lifetime, making decisions based on dreams is probably fine. Because there's no threat of there being anyone else in there trying to influence your dreams.
True.
You know what I mean? So like dream decisions are probably fine. Now, I mean, you may want to reevaluate your decision-making skills if you're making them based on dreams.
I feel like a lot of like shady decisions in history have been made based on dreams. So
talked about this like in our last episode.
Oh yeah, in Waco, they like had that from a dream, didn't they, or something?
There was a couple of sort of like, I dreamt this, and so it is.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I like the idea too in Inception that literally, everyone who goes into the, like, when you go into a dream, you can't remember your life before. And when you come out of the dream, you can't really remember the dream. I like that his team is trained to remember that. Like, I like that people who are going into a, like, if we, like they, if they weren't trained to do that and they brought anyone who they brought in wouldn't realize it's a dream, you know, like, I love that you have to train to remember this stuff. It's just so
well, and you got your totem too, you know, to help you figure out if it's real or not.
Well, I feel like the totem is useless if you can't remember. I feel like you need the totem and the training at the same time.
Yeah, you need the wherewithal to be like,
because you need the knowledge to know. You need to know to test if it's a dream or not.
Sometimes when I watch Inception, I'm like, I wonder what my totem would be.
I think about what my totem would be too, and I have no idea.
I feel like it's so hard to have anything not be the
top. Well, Ellen Page's is like a chess piece, but I have no idea. Like, is it a chess piece that can only fall when you push it from one side?
Right.
I don't know how her totem works.
Yeah, I was wondering that too.
I understand how, what's his face? Joseph Gordon-Levitt, his is a loaded dice, and only he knows how it's loaded, so he knows what number it does every time. I guess Cobb he must know the exact time that it takes for that top to fall down. Like, he has to. That's the only way for that totem to work.
What would be my totem? Maybe, like, a quarter with, like, both heads? I don't know. But that doesn't make sense.
No, it does make sense, because then if you ever flipped a coin and it was tails, you would know that if you flipped the coin and it landed tails, you'd be like, this is a dream.
But how many times would I have to do it for it to, like, land tails?
They have to manifest their totem. I never thought about that. So you have one in real life, but then
Well, it's just in your brain, right? It's just in your memory.
No, I know, but oh, I guess all of that, because everyone has some sort of effect on, because if you are the one who dreams up your totem,
yeah,
I guess you would only dream up your totem if you would dream your totem that's what it is, because you would dream your totem correctly if you knew you were going, if you knew you were in a dream. But if you didn't know you were in a dream and somebody else, so I wonder if I knew that I had a totem, right, and I didn't know that I was in a dream, and I go to reach into my pocket, does the person who is trying to infiltrate my mind know? So, like, is it their subconscious or whatever that dreams up the fake totem in my pocket, or is it my subconscious that dreams up the fake totem? Because regardless, then, if I'm like, oh, I need to see if I'm in a dream, and I go and grab my totem, and now if I generate my totem, whether I know it or not, you know what I mean? Like, if it just appears in my pocket and I don't know that it just appears there and spin it, if I create it, regardless of what happens, it's always gonna land as my totem should.
Yeah.
Brent just sent a brain explosion meme.
Well, this is what Christopher Nolan movies do to you.
No, I know, but I feel like because normally there's not a plot hole like this. I feel like there wouldn't be because the whole point of the movie, the final shot is of the totem. So I feel like they have to be. I feel like there's something that I'm not thinking of that. Or, like, I'm just misunderstanding them. Because I feel like they're airtight. I feel like a totem is an airtight plot point.
I think it's as simple as, like, if you're in a dream, your brain is trained to know that that totem will not fall or whatever. And if you're not in a dream, gravity takes over.
It's got to be. No, I know. But if you're in a dream. Because they only have a reference if from the real life, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're referencing their behavior in the dream based off of real life.
But you're still in that dream, right? So you're saying and what you're wearing.
Yeah. What?
If you're in someone else's dream, it doesn't matter who is the architect or who created the dream. You still choose what you're wearing, right? Or is that... Maybe that's a plot hole.
I don't know. Maybe it's not for... Oh, my God. It's not a plot hole. The answer is there's no way to know. It's only so that when you know for a fact that you're on a job, it's a just in case, because things can get confusing going in and out of dreams all the time. So it's not a protection against if someone tries to convince you you're not dreaming. It's to just remind yourself where you are, basically.
Gotcha.
I think. But
all I want to know is what my totem is. That's all I need to know.
I have no idea what my totem would be.
My totem is like a ricin pill. If I take it and I don't die, it's a dream.
No. You would need to be if you don't die, it's real life, Bob. Because no, this is how the double-sided coin could work.
Yeah.
Because you could you wouldn't flip it, you would just look at it.
Right.
And so people could know that you have as long as you only showed people one side of that coin, people would know that a coin is your totem, but they wouldn't know what's on the other side of the coin. And so you could always see what's on. I thought about like a deck of cards that's in a specific a deck of cards that's in a specific order,
or that like all the cards are like spades or something.
Yeah, or all the cards are spades.
You got like a red pill and a blue pill, and like if it's real, if you take the red pill.
If it's red, yeah, if it's Brent, real
I can
life.
See your brain gears working over there. You're thinking of your totem.
Yeah,
what would your totem be?
I don't know, man. I honestly have no idea. I really don't. I've been really grinding my gears over here trying to figure out what it would be. And I got nothing, to be honest with you. I don't know.
I am in layer 2, when they're in dream layer 2 in the hotel. I don't understand why, like, Leonardo DiCaprio is so intense about telling, like, why he's like, listen to me, you have to listen to me. Like, why is he so intense about, and like, why is Fisher, like,
school of acting?
I guess so. Like, why are they all panicking about it being a dream?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
I don't know.
They're panicking because they panic purely about it being a dream. They, before Fisher even finds out that there might be people trying to steal stuff from him.
Right.
Which is just weird.
Isn't it because the subconscious is starting to like catch on to them?
The subconscious is, well, oh, that's probably why, because the subconscious can look at other subconscious projections and know.
Right.
It's like the scene where Joseph Gordon-Levitt is like, they're looking for the dreamer, which is me. And then he's like, quick, kiss me. And then he kisses Ellen Page. And then she's like, they're all still staring. And then he just goes, oh, it was worth a shot.
Yeah, that was smooth. That was smooth, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you smooth bastard.
Fly dog.
We can talk about lucid dreaming for a little bit.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, if you listen to our dreams podcast for a few weeks ago, we had so much that we never really got to a lot of things. And so there's a few things that we can kind of skim through here and just kind of talk openly about that we never got to talk about. One of those things being lucid dreaming, which is kind of a theme in Inception. Basically, lucid dreaming is the conscious perception of one's state while dreaming. So you get to choose what, you know, that you have some degree of control over what your dreams are. And you can have control over the actions within the dream or even the characters and the environment. So lucid dreaming has actually been scientifically verified, which is kind of cool. So it's a real thing.
They have like masks, like sleep masks and stuff that are apparently meant to induce lucid dreaming. Ooh. There's a million different products you can use. Like, there's like a phone app that will like detect when you're in REM sleep or whatever. And then will like, I think it like plays you a message or does something that is supposed to, cause you to lucid dream. It'd be interesting to try to use one, like try to find an app that's like, it's meant to induce lucid dreaming.
That should be our brain boggled homework, to try and lucid dream.
Dude, tonight I'll like use an app to see if it can induce a lucid dream.
Sometimes, so it's funny, speaking of like totems, there are ways that to help yourself realize you're dreaming within a dream.
You like look in a mirror or read a book or something, right?
Right. Look, if you look in a mirror, your reflection, if it doesn't look normal, you're in a dream. You can't read in a dream, which is interesting. So if you like look in a book and you can't read anything, then you're in a dream. Solid objects. So if you push your hand against a wall or a table and it goes through, then you're in a dream. This is so dumb, but like this is all the stuff I found.
All the stuff. It's so funny because when you're in a dream, you're like not thinking about this kind of stuff. Like that's what they do on layer two. Their like whole gambit is they pretend to be, you can get trained against infiltration. You can train your subconscious to automatically protect against these people coming in and trying to steal information. So Leonardo DiCaprio tries to convince Fisher that he is a projection and part of his dream. And what he does is he points out all the weird inaccuracies that wouldn't be in real life. And it's so funny because all of those things that are like, this is how you figure out if you're in a dream, and they all boil down to, if X is weird, you're in a dream.
Right.
And if you look, and they sound so ridiculous.
They do. They do. Something else that you can do to lucid dream is keeping a dream journal. That's like a really important part of lucid dreaming. The more you remember your dreams, the more you can connect and tap into that sort of subconscious dreaming world. So that's something that I would be interested in possibly trying again. I used to do that when I was younger, but I haven't done it in a while.
A dream journal?
Yeah.
I tried to keep one, but I just kept forgetting to write it down.
Apparently, the way to wake up if you're in a dream, like say you're lucid dreaming and you're like, I don't wanna. You call out for help. It's said that yelling in your dreams tells your brain that it's time to wake up. Which is interesting.
That is really funny.
If you manage to speak out loud, you might wake yourself up. Apparently, if you blink repeatedly, that can like translate to your actual body.
And your eyes will open?
Yeah.
That's really funny.
And then apparently, this is really funny. If you fall asleep in your dream, then you'll wake up in real life. I don't know why that reminded me of like Minecraft.
Like, I have no idea why that reminded you of Minecraft either.
It's like, oh, I'm asleep. I got to go to bed. And you go over to your little bed and you go to sleep to wake up. I don't know. It's so dumb.
Yeah, I have no idea why that reminds you of Minecraft. I mean, really you sleep in Minecraft, but like you don't sleep to like wake up.
I guess I just picture like my bed in my dream being like a little Minecraft bed that I go to.
Goofy.
And then the last thing that I had on here was do animals dream, because that was a question I kind of had, and so the answer is interesting. Most animals do dream. Dogs dream about chasing animals all the time, which is why we talked about this in the dream episode.
Yeah, I'll see my dogs chasing things in their dreams.
They also dream about their owners, which is adorable.
That's funny.
And then what about fish? That's kind of one thing that I was wondering, is do fish dream? Well, scientists don't know for sure fish dream, but we do know that they go through different sleep cycles while they sleep. So it is possible.
Do androids dream of electric sheep?
Yes. Okay. I was thinking the same joke and you got there first. So touche.
Which, thank God, the movie adaptation Blade Runner, if anyone didn't know, Blade Runner is a movie adaptation of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep. Thank God they changed the name, because the name has a much more meaningful punchline in the books than it would have in the movies if they because it, like in the books, Deckard actually has an electric sheep as a pet. Because they explain that in the books, society and like the culture of the times really values people who can take care of animals really well. So if you can't afford to take care of a real animal, you get like a robot bird or a robot sheep. And so since the society puts so much pressure on taking care of these animals, like obviously you would dream about these animals if you have to take care of them. And so the question is, does an android dream of electric sheep? Meaning, does an android care about whatever it's taking care of? Which is actually a very punctual and interesting punchline for that whole book thing. It's really cool.
Does the book, Bobby the book dream has, of Minecraft sheep?
Probably. I've had dreams about video games, I feel.
Oh, I definitely have. Yeah, so and speaking of that dreams episode, I remembered what the thing that I was saying in my sleep that Christy overheard me.
Oh, let's hear it.
Was apparently it? I was saying something about Final Fantasy. Apparently, like in the dream, I was playing Final Fantasy VII Remake, I was in it, and I was like doing some side quest mission, and I was apparently trying to find the really large figs.
And is that actually in the game?
No. There's nothing to do with, there's nothing about figs in Final Fantasy VII at all, but apparently I just kept saying, yeah, I need to find the figs.
Those are really funny.
They're really big figs. I guess so, yeah.
All right.
I don't know.
Now we
know. Or like the actual plants, but yeah, that's what I was saying. So
that's amazing.
That is
that's
really
just
funny.
For the Patreons.
Brent, I feel like you got to post that meme that Christy made, the Final Fantasy VII meme.
Oh, yeah. Oh. For anyone who plays Final Fantasy VII Remake, she made a really good crossover Final Fantasy VII community meme. I'll throw it up in the Discord here for you boyos, but I could throw it up on the Patreon later, too.
You don't even have to play Final Fantasy VII to understand how great this meme is.
Yeah, if I can freaking move the guy in the Discord. Where are you?
Yeah. I think once we get this meme sent, that's probably where we'll leave this episode off.
Yeah, I think so.
We're an hour in now.
I think so. It's nice. It's so good. This better not awaken anything in me. What's nice about Audacity is I can see the time finally instead of GarageBand where it's like,
oh wait, gibberish. That's cloud. I was like, I don't get it.
Yeah, that's the there's a very famous scene within that game where Cloud has to cross dress, and
more layers to this meme than I thought.
Game, it's just kind of like a goofy scene. I actually think they did a really good job within the game. It's insane. Like, there's a whole dance sequence you have to go through and everything, but it ends with this button of like sort of, you know, gender fluidity and self acceptance and like self love. That's like kind of amazing and beautiful. But like, yeah, there's this moment in it where like the character who's sort of like deciding like he's going to make Cloud look like a woman. I won't tell you why. You'll play the game. It makes sense within the game. But yeah, so it's just a screenshot of the guy Andrea sort of dipping Cloud as a woman and just saying perfection. And then it's the dean from a Community looking at the computer saying, "This better not awaken anything in me."
Pretty good.
Because in the show, like, he famously has this weird like sort of furry Dalmatian thing going on, and he's like watching a video on his computer of someone dressed as a Dalmatian, and he says, "This better not awaken anything in me." And so,
some goofy stuff.
I love it.
Some good stuff. Yeah.
All right. Well,
and then
thank you
like
guys.
A flashback too, where he does it with cross dressing. Sorry, Jack.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's fine. I'm just trying to.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Sign off. Let's wrap it up.
Thanks for listening, you beautiful patrons. Thank you for giving us your money. We appreciate it.
All your support.
We love you more than the world itself. For sure.
I'll admit that one because he's the patrons. So we gotta shell out. Not shell out. What is it? Sell out? Not sell out. What is it when you like
squell out?
It's no. It's like simping, but like a real word.
I don't know.
If only I understood what simping meant.
Simping is when you like. Okay, well, this I guess can stay in. But simping is this new word. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not new. It's a few months old, but people
I've seen it going around, but I don't fully get it.
It means it's so it started off with like. It basically means a dude who is like sacrificing everything in their life for a girl who doesn't even realize that they're like there. So
that's a
an
very
example
good definition.
Of an example of simping would be like is if there's like a female streamer on Twitch, like simps would like donate a lot of money to her to try to get like to try to get noticed by this streamer. And so it started out as that word. And I think when you're meaning that specific as like some dude who's giving up anything for a girl who never wants to give him attention, like, oh, it's such a good word. But now it's just used for any dude who is being nice to a girl in any capacity is called a simp.
Yeah.
Like if you hold a door open, you're a simp. If you tell your girlfriend she looks nice today, you're a simp.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, if she's your girlfriend, by definition, you cannot be a simp. Yeah. Like, it used to be such a good word.
It's
kind of
gotten ruined. It's gotten tarnished.
Yeah, now it's been overused. It was like cringe. Like cringe used to be such a good word, and then it got overused.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
On that note, us simps.
You Patreons, you guys are not cringe.
You guys aren't simps.
You guys aren't simps. Of course,
we love you.
We love you, and we're giving you attention. Thanks for listening.
Yes. See you back on the main feed.
See you on the main pod. We don't even have to plug anything because if you're a Patreon, you probably already know.
You guys
are
already bought in.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.
We really love you. Bye.